This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Yitzhak Rabin's confessed assassin, Yigal Amir, is a Jewish law student. He says he wanted to stop the Israeli government from handing over the West Bank to Palestinian self-rule. He was known on campus as a devout Jew and a militant critic of the peace process. My guest Yossi Klein Halevi understands the logic zealots use to justify their actions. Halevi once was one. In the late 60s and early 70s, while coming of age in Brooklyn, he was a member of the Jewish Defense League, a militant extremist Zionist group led by Meir Kahana. Kahana later moved to Israel and founded the far-right Kach Party. Halevi, who now considers himself a centrist, has lived in Israel for the past 13 years. He's a senior writer for the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report. He covers the right wing in Israel. He's also the author of the new book, Memoirs of a Jewish Extremist. I asked him to share his reaction to the assassination of Rabin.
My fear is for the sanity of Israel, for the mental health, the stability of this country, and I just wonder how much more the Israeli psyche can take. You know, Jews, religious Jews, have been fasting for 3,000 years. There's a minor fast known as the Fast of Gedalia. And Gedalia was a Jewish governor under the time of the Babylonian occupation and of the land of Israel. And he was assassinated by Jewish zealots. This was 3,000 years ago. And ever since then, every year, Jews fast to mourn the blood spilled by fellow Jews. And I was wondering about all of us who I'm an observant Jew, and all of us who observe that fast. Is it just a ritual? I mean, are we so disconnected from the meaning of what we do? Do we do this just by rote? That there are some religious Jews today who could actually be glad that that another Gedalia has been killed by fellow Jews.
A lot of people were shocked when they found out that it was a Jew who killed Rabin. Were you shocked? You've been a member of the Jewish extremist right. Did you already sense that there were people on the edge who had this in them, or that there'd be somebody out there who had it in him?
I wish I could say that I was shocked, but I wasn't. One of my beats as a journalist is covering the Israeli right. And in the last few months, I've been hearing an escalation of the rhetoric of violence. People have been openly speaking about assassination. I've heard it from seemingly mild-mannered Israelis with right-wing views. And the depth of fear, and I stress the fear because the root of the hatred is really fear. At the depth of that fear was I felt like it was an abyss, and when you're in the grip of that kind of dread, then anything can happen. And I didn't, I wasn't waiting for this, I wasn't expecting it, but I was sure that the violence was, in some way, the internal Jewish violence was going to escalate.
Do you see the assassination as the work of some lone crazy, or do you think that the assassination represents the feelings of a larger group of extremists?
No, it absolutely is not the action of a lone crazy. There is a context of violence, of verbal violence, from which the act of physical violence emerges. The mourning among Jews is not universal today. I don't know how many Jews are celebrating or secretly glad, but they're more than we want to believe. And at the same time that I expect a soul-searching on the right, I would hope that the entire country would re-examine the way in which we Israelis conduct our political discourse, the mutual delegitimization between left and right, the violent name-calling that happens in the Israeli parliament. We conduct our political debate the way we drive, with reckless disregard for the next person on the road. And that is what I hope Israelis will begin to do, to look at our culture, our political culture, because it's rotten across the spectrum. And this is what scares me.
What is the rhetoric now within the extreme of the religious right in Israel?
More and more what I'm hearing is Holocaust rhetoric. I saw a sign recently that said 6 million plus 130,000, 130,000 meaning the settlers in the West Bank. And I think that's the kind of twisted Holocaust obsessiveness which I grew up with. I know it very well. You look at the world through black and white terms. The world is your enemy. The Holocaust can happen again. Jews now have become hysterical and see threats in every corner. And even when there are legitimate threats, they carry those threats out to the extreme. Let's say we have a security threat in Israel. That doesn't mean that another Holocaust is about to come. But the Holocaust was a trauma of such extremity that some Jews, many Jews, no longer can see the world in a realistic way. And that even if we do face dangers, and I'm one of those who believe that the peace process is a very risky proposition for Israel, but even so, there's a tremendous difference between taking risks and between facing another Holocaust. And the far right has taken on this Holocaust obsession to an extent where it can no longer differentiate between kinds of threats and even between threats and opportunities.
It seems to me you might be speaking from experience. You were part of the extreme Jewish right in America, in New York, where you grew up.
Right.
How did the Holocaust figure into your extremism when you were an extremist?
Well, I'd say that the Holocaust was an act of such stunning clarity that there was no possibility of being relativistic about the Holocaust. It was clear that it was good and evil.
Your parents both survived the Holocaust?
My father was a survivor. And for him, the Holocaust was absolutely the center point of how he viewed the rest of the world. And I grew up feeling that the Jews were, in effect, a separate species, that the rest of the world was so hostile to Jewish survival that we referred to the rest of the world, to the non-Jewish world, as the world. It's as if we inhabited a kind of planet of the Jews. And psychologically, we inhabited a separate planet. And the Israeli right today is living on the planet of the Jews. They don't live on planet Earth. They believe that the rest of the planet wants to either actively or passively destroy the Jewish people. The mentality of a Jewish right-winger, and this I know very well from experience, is that you divide the non-Jewish world into only two categories. There are those who actively want to destroy the Jews and those who will passively be glad if it happens.
So
and when you live in that kind of a world, then anything is permissible to you because everywhere is a threat. And the greatest danger comes from a weakening of the ranks within. If you're living under siege, then those who are within your walls, within your ranks, who are trying, in effect, to make overtures to the enemy outside, are your greatest danger. And therefore, you have full license to deal with the enemies within your rank in any way that you believe will guarantee your survival.
You were a member of a group in New York that was kind of like a forerunner of Meir Kahane's extremist group.
Well, it was the Jewish Defense League, which was founded by Meir Kahane. It was the group that he founded before he went on to Kach in Israel. This was in the late 60s, early 70s. And the issues were different then. We were concerned with saving Soviet Jewry at that time, with trying to get the Soviet Union to open up the gates. But the tactics were the same. The tactics were violence, were terrorism. The idea that because you're a victim, all means are legitimate. And our greatest enemies were the establishment Jewish leaders. They were the traitors.
My guest is Yossi Klein Halevi. He's written a new book called Memoirs of a Jewish Extremist. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Israeli journalist Yossi Klein Halevi. He's a former extremist who now describes himself as a centrist. Now, how far were you willing to go to work against the mainstream Jewish leaders who were seen by your group as the enemy?
Well, at one point I was involved in a very active campaign against Jewish leaders. I led sit-ins in the offices of B'nai B'rith and Hadassah and heckled Jewish leaders. And at one point, we were actively considering violence against Jewish leaders if they wouldn't meet our demands. So I understand, unfortunately, I understand the psyche of someone who's so caught up with what he imagines to be his mission to help save the Jewish people, that you're ready to consider anything.
In your recent book, Memoirs of a Jewish Extremist, you write that being tough was urgent for you. Why did you feel like you needed to be tough? What psychological need was that filling?
You see, one of the great shocks of the Holocaust was that it could happen on such a vast scale and Jews could have been caught so unprepared. So as if to, in a sense, to compensate, really to overcompensate for the lack of psychological preparation, the lack of physical resistance with which Jews responded to the Holocaust, I felt, in a sense, that I had to retroactively undo the shame of Jewish passivity during the Holocaust by being as aggressive, as militant to the enemies of the Jews as I could.
You cover the right now for Jerusalem Report in Israel. Do you feel that the rhetoric on the extremist right now is still as influenced by the Holocaust as it was when you were in the extremist movement?
Oh, I think even more so today. I think I'm speaking on the extremist right, not the mainstream right.
Mm-hmm.
One doesn't find this in Likud as much, and one also needs to make a distinction between the mainstream settler movement and the fringe of the settler movement, because they're not the same. But on the fringes of the right, without question, Rabin, in their minds, was leading the Jews to the gas chambers. And the comparison that they've been making with the Israeli government is with the Judenrat, who were the collaborationist Jewish leaders in the Nazi-occupied ghettos during the Holocaust.
You've been living in Israel for 13 years. Why did you move there, and in what frame of mind politically were you when you moved?
Well, I was no longer on the far right. I had disengaged from Meir Kahana and Kahanism already years before, but I would have identified myself as a mainstream right winger at that point, rather than a centrist today. And one of the key incidents that changed me, that pushed me out of the right forever, was an event that I witnessed as a journalist shortly after arriving in Israel. At the time, I was reporting for the Village Voice. I was their Israel correspondent. And one night, I turned on the news. There had been a Peace Now demonstration, a left-wing demonstration against the Begin government at that time. And a right winger had thrown a grenade at demonstrators, killing one of the demonstrators, who, as it turned out, the victim turned out to be a distant cousin of mine. And I rushed down to the demonstration, and what I saw there was something that made me break from the right forever. There were still some demonstrators wandering around dazed. There were pools of blood on the ground. There were syringes floating in these pools of blood that the medics had left. And there was a group of right-wing demonstrators who had come to heckle. And they were standing around chanting the right-wing slogans that they'd been chanting all night as if nothing had changed. And I went over to them and I said, "Don't you know what's happened here?" And they started to laugh. And I said, "Jews are killing Jews in Israel." And one guy said, "Who sent you here, Shimon Peres?" And the other started to laugh. And I walked away, and there was that shock, that moment, that instant of that moment of transformation, when suddenly you realize the consequences of seeing the world in black and white terms, that you unleash forces that you have no control over, and that the way it plays itself out in the end is with an assassin's gun.
Yossi Klein Halevi, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Yossi Klein Halevi is a senior writer for the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report. His new book is called Memoirs of a Jewish Extremist. This is Fresh Air.